Good morning. Good to see you all today. Isn't that sunshine beautiful out there? Spring is coming. But before it gets here, probably a lot of mud. Well, it's nice to have some visitors with us today. I see Caleb's here today and Josiah. They're not really visitors, but haven't seen them in a while. So it is a real privilege to have them here. And anybody else I'm missing? The rest of you are just supposed to show up here, right? Well, we live in changing times. Uncertain times. Times like the times of Isaiah. I think probably as we reflect on the events in the world these days, we should be able to more and more identify with some of the tensions and fears and uncertainties that would have faced the world that Isaiah is speaking to. In Isaiah 23, we start a new oracle, the last one of this set. And this one doesn't have a cryptic name. It clearly is identified as the burden of Tyre. And if you've ever been to Great Britain, you might have noticed that over there, if you go to a tire store, it has nothing to do with the city of the Phoenicians. It's the way they spell those black rubber things that go on your car. T-Y-R-E, a tire store. But they spell a lot of things weird over there. But it does sort of look odd as you're going down the street. They misspelled that. Well, maybe not. But we're not talking about those items. We're talking about the city. And let's see here. Let me pull up a map right quick so you can remember where this is. So, we're looking here at the eastern coast of the Mediterranean Sea, and of course, Jerusalem and the Dead Sea, and the area here that the Israelites largely populated. And up here on the sea course, coast to the north, we have the cities of Tyre and Sidon, always closely connected in history. Basically the same people group, the Phoenicians, and they were incredibly influential in the ancient world, usually credited with the first alphabet as the basis for language, and as well with an incredible system of trade that stretched the length of the Mediterranean Sea. Tyre itself was an island at this time in history. It's good they were good at shipping because they needed to be. But, so that's where we're talking about.
Has it been connected since?
Well, there was, we'll get to that, but if you want a preview. Yes. It was connected by a combination of the efforts of man and natural forces. Yes. So, back to the text here. Now, this is one of those passages, if you just read it without doing some extensive research, isn't terribly enlightening. But we'll read it just so we can do a before and after shot, right? So we'll see what it does for you this way, and then after a little bit of looking at the details, maybe it will be better. The burden of Tyre, howl, ye ships of Tarshish, for it is laid waste. So already, what a vision, ships howling. It is laid waste so that there is no house, no entering in. From the land of Chittim it is revealed to them. Be still, ye inhabitants of the isle, thou whom the merchants of Zidon, and that would be Sidon, that pass over the sea have replenished. And by the rivers the seed of Sihor, which is another name for the Nile. The harvest of the river is her revenue, and she is a mart of nations. Be thou ashamed, O Sidon, for the sea hath spoken, even the strength of the sea, saying, I travail not, nor bring forth children, neither do I nourish up young men, nor bring forth virgins. So you kind of get a feel for what's going on here? Maybe not. Lots of images. As at the report concerning Egypt, so shall they be sorely pained at the report of Tyre. Pass ye over to Tarshish, how, ye inhabitants of the isle. Is this your joyous city, whose antiquity is of ancient days? Her own fleet shall carry her afar off to sojourn. And by the way, Tyre is thought to be one of the oldest cities in the world, thought to have been established maybe as early as 2900 B.C. So would have been around during the time of the pharaohs who built the pyramids. Pass ye over to Tarshish, how ye inhabitants of the isle. Is this your joyous city whose antiquity is of ancient days? Her own fleet shall carry her afar off to sojourn. Who hath taken this counsel against Tyre, the crowning city, whose merchants are princes, whose traffickers are the honorable of the earth? Different use of traffickers than we usually see today. The Lord of hosts hath purposed it, to stain the pride of all glory, and to bring into contempt all the honorable of the earth. Pass through thy land as a river, O daughter of Tarshish. There is no more strength. He stretched out his hand over the sea. He shook the kingdoms. The Lord hath given a commandment against the merchant city to destroy the strongholds thereof. And he said, thou shalt no more rejoice. O thou oppressed virgin, daughter of Sidon, arise, pass over to Chittim, which, by the way, I'll go ahead and mention is Cyprus. In general, the word can refer to the isles of the Mediterranean, but is referring to Cyprus in this context. There also shalt thou have no rest. Behold the land of the Chaldeans. This people was not until the Assyrian founded it for them that dwelt in the wilderness. They set up the towers thereof. They raised up the palaces thereof. And he brought it to ruin. How, ye ships of Tarshish, for your strength is laid waste. And it shall come to pass in that day that Tyre shall be forgotten 70 years, according to the days of one king. After the end of 70 years shall Tyre sing as an harlot. Take an harp, go about the city, thou harlot that hast been forgotten. Make sweet melody, sing many songs, that thou mayest be remembered. And it shall come to pass after the end of 70 years that the Lord will visit Tyre, and she shall turn to her hire, and shall commit fornication with all the kingdoms of the world upon the face of the earth. And her merchandise and her hire shall be holiness to the Lord. It shall not be treasured or laid up, for her merchandise shall be for them that dwell before the Lord, to eat sufficiently and for durable clothing. Okay, so you see what I mean? It's hard to read that and just say, well, there's some words to live by. Well, let's look at some examination of this passage by Alec. Tyre, pride and holiness. The world in the shadows, and let's see, I need to enlarge this maybe for Kurt a little bit.
That's great.
Okay. Let's see. Oh.
Or just view Zoom. Oh, that's great too.
Bigger type, and then we zoom to 150.
You're going to lose some of it.
Didn't do it anyway, did it? That's pretty good size type, isn't it? Right. We'll get rid of the blue. All right. Everybody's relaxed now and happy. The world in shadows has proved to be an apt title for this cycle of oracles. So this is the title that was given to the series of oracles that we are currently looking at. And now he'll review what those were. The twilight of Babylon, the lone voice out of Edom's darkness. This was chapter 21. Troubled Gentile tribes lodging overnight. The Arabs, you may remember. The spiritual darkness of Jerusalem's unforgivable sin. And now wailing over fallen Tyre. Yet there have been flickers of light, too. The news of Babylon was brought, as if for comfort, to crushed Israel, in chapter 21. The voice out of Seir was invited to return, because day was bound to come. And now, a great surprise, the merchandise of Tyre will become holiness to the Lord. So a little review of the interactions between the Phoenicians and the Israelites. David and Solomon enjoyed warm relations with Tyre, marred only by Tyrian discontent over the cities that Solomon ceded to him. Okay, and that's kind of an interesting enough account. I'm going to go there right quick and read that to you in 1 Kings 9:10. You may remember that Tyre was essential to the building projects that Solomon was engaged in, providing materials and architects and workmen. And I've forgotten the verse.
9:10.
Okay, thank you. 9:10, not 10:9. So, and it came to pass at the end of 20 years, when Solomon had built the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house. Now Hiram, king of Tyre, had furnished Solomon with cedar trees and fir trees and with gold, according to all his desire, that the king Solomon gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. Okay, so stuff like cedar and fir and gold got to be paid for one way or another, so... If you're a king, you might like to be paid in cities or countries if you're a Russian king. And he said, and Hiram came out from Tyre to see the cities which Solomon had given him, and they pleased him not. And he said, what cities are these that thou hast given me, my brother? And he called them the land of Kabul unto this day. What does that mean? it's not immediately obvious why that's a bad word, but it was used contemptuously to refer to this area. So, I mean, I don't know what kind of cities these were. I'm not going to suggest any modern contemporaries, lest I offend somebody. But they just didn't amount to much, apparently. In terms of value, you know, if you're a king, you want a city that has perhaps some sort of product that you can sell and make money off of, or some sort of commodity that is truly valuable. And anyway, Hiram was not impressed with the cities that Solomon gave him, but apparently it didn't hurt the relationship too bad.
Binding, maybe it was like, I'm stuck with these.
Perhaps. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so that was that reference. Hiram of Tyre always loved David, according to 1 Kings 5, and renewed his covenant with Solomon in 1 Kings 5:12. Cooperating commercially over the temple. But there was another side. Solomon took Phoenician wives and imported the cult of the Sidonian Ashtoreth. These high places, which were a part of this cult worship, remained, and Isaiah would have grown up with an awareness of Tyre's corruption of Israel's most favored king. Okay, so the some of these high places were not destroyed until the time of Josiah, which was after Isaiah, of course. Sometimes we lose sight of the fact that there were long periods of history whenever there were active cults of idolatry in the land of Israel. And it wasn't just Yahweh who was worshipped. Okay, so these high places remained. Isaiah would have been aware of this. Phoenician influence was an evil genius to the northern kingdom also. So after the kingdoms were split into north and south, it was a major influence on the northern kingdom. It was much closer. Even to the extent of almost replacing Yahweh with the Baal of Sidon. In the Psalms, however, we find Tyre in a hostile coalition against Israel. Yet, the psalmist prays that the Gentile nations may come to know the name of the Lord. So these are different passages in the Bible that refer to Tyre and Sidon in some way. And he's noting here that there were some positive references in the Psalms. In Psalm 45, the, quote, daughter of Tyre brings a gift to the royal wedding. And in Psalm 87, Tyre is accorded birthright honors in Zion. Finally, in the prophets, references are for the most part hostile. And there are a number of those. It is of Tyre alone that Ezekiel fails to say that they will yet know the Lord. Isaiah, however, looks forward to the dedication of Tyre's wealth to the Lord and his people. And he is thus living within the traditions to which he was heir, and indeed reaching back to the normative times of David. When the first cycle of oracles that we read from chapters 13 through 20 placed the people of God amid the political upheavals of the world, the emphasis in the second cycle has been religious. The fall of the idols of Babylon, the unforgivable sin of Jerusalem. Suitably, therefore, at the end we come to Tyre, the religious corrupter. But just as Egypt, the political oppressor, will yet come into a co-equal status in the Lord, so Tyre will yet come into a relationship of holiness. Okay, so that's the commentator's take on what this chapter is driving at. I am interested to see how he salvages the words of this chapter and manages to get this out of them, right? I mean, sure, holiness is mentioned, but a lot of the stuff is too. And so I'm interested. what Tyre gave of old for the temple was on a commercial basis. But the Old Testament nourished the care a Phoenician widow once extended to a prophet. And this will be the norm of coming relationships. The Oracle on Tyre consists of a poem on Tyre's fall and an appendix predicting Tyre's revival and ultimate allegiance to the Lord and his people. That would be verses 15 through 18. Hope of something better. Women of Tyre seduced Solomon, but the daughter of Tyre would yet come to the wedding of the king. Isaiah puts the matter in a nutshell. The corrupter will bring holy merchandise. So that's kind of an overview of the chapter. Now, on the verse by verse. Verse 1 speaks of the ships of Tarshish howling. The term ships of Tarshish were a way to describe the largest class of merchantmen in ancient fleets. Okay, so it's like us talking about the Titanic. It sort of has, it's not as big as our biggest ships anymore, but it kind of has that connotation of really something big. So the ships of Tarshish express that kind of ship. And we don't know absolutely for sure where Tarshish was. There are a number of different theories. The one that seems to have the most acceptance is that it was a city in Spain and was the source of various types of heavy ores that required massive ships to carry. And so ships that were a part of that trade were big ships, and therefore it came to represent a large merchant ship, even though it wasn't always carrying that particular kind of thing. And so it's kind of like the container ships of our day, right? What happens to world trade if the container ships stop moving, or at least stop unloading, right? And of course, right now we just see a delay, but imagine if they stopped. It would be a very serious situation for much of the world. And so Tyre was the city that built these ships and was responsible for the network of trade that operated them. So a seriously important part of the ancient world. Without Tyre, much of their trade would be lost. Most references to Tarshish would be satisfied by the tradition, an old identification with Tartessos in Spain. Anyway, this expression came to mean ships capable of the longest voyages. Imaginatively, Isaiah thinks of the fleet literally out from Cyprus or off Cyprus, making for Tyre, only to be met with the message that it was no more. No name is necessary. City and harbor alike are gone. Okay, and I don't know, perhaps in order for you to follow this, you need to be thinking about what the verse said. So, howl, ye ships of Tarshish, for it is laid waste, so that there is no house, no entering in. From the land of Cyprus, it is revealed to them. Okay. Next verse says, be still, ye inhabitants of the isle, thou whom the merchants of Sidon that pass over the sea have replenished. Okay, be silent, motionless. This beginning of the stanza contrasts with the following impression of a bustling international port. Island is here the city and Isle of Tyre, and is referred to as ye merchants of Sidon, the travelers by the sea. Verse 3 says, if I would have had another half hour, I would have interspersed these verses in my commentary, but I didn't. And by the great waters, the seed of Sihor, the harvest of the river, is her revenue. She is a mart of the nations. Okay, now we noted that that refers to the Nile and therefore Egypt. And so this whole matter of shipping also is a way of getting food around the world. So it's important not just to the people that receive, but to the people that ship. If you grow lots of grain and you can't send it to the market, it makes good rat food, but not much else. So it's a serious matter. So a reference to the reality that Egypt was dependent on Tyre as well. So, you know, one thing you see here, Isaiah was very keenly in touch with world events, with world economy, with what was going on. He saw this interaction between power and commerce and all these things, and weaves them into his prophecy. So Egypt and the production of food and its importance in this matter. Verse 4 then, the silence of the busy port described in the previous verse is matched by the sense of blighted, disappointed hopes that prevail. Ashamed goes beyond the feeling of embarrassment to the more public idea of reaping shame, of expectation coming to nothing, and of becoming an object of derision. Once more, Isaiah's rich imagination takes over, and he hears the sea mourning its loss. This verse has been the subject of much needless alteration of the Masoretic text, including the NIV. A literal translation would be, "For the sea has spoken, the stronghold of the sea, saying," and let's jump over to what it is they say, "I travail not, nor bring forth children, neither do I nourish up young men, nor bring up virgins." Okay, so what is that expressing?
Life is not continuing on as normal.
Okay, so it expresses bereavement, right? He says the phrase, "I have neither," is literally, I am as though I had never. So the sea is, as it were, mourning the fact that there are not going to be these ships of Tyre sailing its waters. It's as though I have no offspring, nobody to carry on the future. Isaiah is here tapping into the natural human despondency that comes from not having any seed to carry on the name. It's just interesting how he weaves all these aspects of human experience into the picture that communicates the end. Verse 5. I keep going to the wrong verse. I mean the wrong version. Sorry. "As at the report concerning Egypt, so shall they be sorely pained at the report of Tyre." Okay, so in one of the previous oracles, we had the fall of Egypt forecast. And he says, as that caused pain then, so it will with Tyre. A huge loss. And it's, you know, it's remarkable that the fall of a city could cause as much pain and impact on the ancient world as the fall of a country, right? Huge difference in population and size, and yet the impact of this city-state being destroyed was one which affected the whole world. In verses 6 and 7, the silence of the shattered city gave way to grief over loss of life, and now to evacuation of refugees heading for Tarshish. A fine image of reversal of fortune. Your city of revelry, the old, old city, is literally your exultant one, whose antiquity is from the days of antiquity. There was an immense vitality in Tyre, which made it expand from a small base to become a power of world significance. But, interestingly, never with imperialist notions, never with the intention to settle in far-off lands. It was trade, not conquest, which drove Tyrians, not lordship, but money. The parallel Egypt oracle in chapter 19 and 20 represents the power of the world pressing on the people of God. Tyre represents the ways of the world exerting their influence. Okay. So the Phoenicians did establish some colonies. The most notable one in northern Africa became the city of Carthage, of much fame in the ancient world and a rival to Rome. But for the most part, their interest was you go and you sell your stuff and you take your money and go home. They weren't looking to conquer people and establish a wide kingdom. It was through commerce that they were extending their influence. Kind of how some other countries in our world have managed to make incredible inroads around the world. Think China, right? In verses 8 and 9, the topic changes from what happened to why it happened. And first of all, to the mind behind the change in Tyre's fortune, the Lord's plan. When Tyre founded colonies, they were ruled by kings that Tyre appointed. Hence, the city could be called the bestower of crowns, as it is in that verse. Not only so, but princes and honored ones of the earth were in Tyre's service. The thought is not of Tyre's possible temptation to pride, but that with all this array of worldly greatness, Tyre is at last faced with the disposer supreme, the Lord Almighty. Why he so planned, we are not told. He is the judge of the earth, and he does right. He decrees to demean the pride of every beauty, to treat with contempt all the honored of the earth. Okay, these words are found in Job and Psalms. But the point here is that God has decreed it, and it shall come to pass. Verses 9 and 10, let's jump back to that text so we don't lose total control of what's going on here. So we see in verse 9, the Lord of hosts hath purposed it to stain the pride of all glory, to bring into contempt all the honorable of the earth. And then 10 says, pass through thy land as a river, O daughter of Tarshish, there is no more strength. Okay, this seems to be a way of saying, whereas before Tyre controlled the ships of Tarshish and the trade of Tarshish, they are given new freedom because Tyre no longer controls it. Speaking of the Lord, he stretched out his hand over the sea. He shook the kingdoms. The Lord hath given a commandment against the merchant city to destroy the strongholds thereof. And he said, thou shalt no more rejoice, O thou oppressed virgin, daughter of Sidon. Arise, pass over to Cyprus. There also shalt thou have no rest. And then a reference to the Chaldeans. Behold the land of the Chaldeans. This people was not till the Assyrian founded it for them that dwelt in the wilderness. They set up the towers thereof. They raised up the palaces thereof. and he brought it to ruin. Okay, so what's Isaiah doing here in these verses? Well, this gives us a chance to connect this with some things in the history of the period. The fourth consequence is a loss of rest. This is reserved for the last stanza so as to make a connection between the downfall of Tyre and Sidon and the way it was come about. In verse 11, the Lord gave an order. We are now to learn who received his command and why the displaced Sidonians will find no rest. Tiglath-Pileser of Assyria began his bid for world domination in 745. And by 738, this is B.C., he was able to impose a military governor on Tyre. Tyre, however, continued to be restive under Assyrian lordship. And in 729, was compelled to pay an indemnity of 150 gold talents. Okay, what could you do with a gold talent in the ancient world?
Build a ship.
You build a warship, a trireme. So that's a heavy tax. Shalmaneser, who ruled 727 through 722, besieged Tyre unsuccessfully. And at the end of the 8th century B.C., Tyre was still in rebellion, negotiating with Egypt against Assyria. Sennacherib laid the mainland waste in 701 and did vast damage to Tyrian trade. According to Erlandson, only the decline of Assyria around 630, only with that did Tyre regain complete independence and the capability of creating new riches. But an inveterate tendency to meddle in revolt meant continuing trouble with the great empires. Nebuchadnezzar opened a 13-year siege in 586, but without ultimate success. So the city of Tyre being built on an island, and this is an artist's conception of how it might have looked, was exceedingly difficult to besiege. This area here is basically a sandbar, how do you use a battering ram on, well, these walls over here that come up against the water, and difficult landing over here with all the rocky shoals. So it was very difficult to besiege. Now, given what we studied about Jerusalem and their concerns about security in the last couple Sundays, what potential problem do you see for the inhabitants of Tyre here?
Fresh water.
Fresh water. Okay. So they're surrounded by seawater, and there aren't any springs on the island. So how did they get their water?
From the sandbar road.
Perhaps some of it that way?
Desalinization plant.
Ah, reverse osmosis, right? They had all these slaves blowing on these pipes. And no. There's one big difference between Tyre and Jerusalem that the Tyrians were able to take advantage of in climate. It rains a lot more. And so you build cisterns to catch the rainwater. And so that is an asset that they had and that they used. And they've still found remains of those old cisterns. So that was interesting to me, for me to think about, you know, what's the difference here? How were they able to hold out a siege so long without a source of water? Well, the source was from above, and you just catch it.
Any effective blockade have required a navy larger than Tyre's, which would have been very hard to find?
Especially if you're Assyrian, right?
Yeah.
So you come across the desert with your great military forces, and here's an island. What do you do now? You could have somebody build you ships. Well, there's the shipbuilders over there. And so, yeah.
They would have built a bridge.
Yeah.
Who would have?
Rome. They just would have built a bridge.
Yeah, well, actually, we're almost to Alexander the Great, and it wasn't exactly a bridge. He just filled in the water in between, tore the city down that was on the mainland, and filled in the sandbar. And he does end up conquering the city. The city of Sidon had received Alexander the Great with open arms and gave him a big gift. And so Tyre gave him matching funds, as much as Sidon had, to try to appease him. But one thing that had developed over the centuries was that the worship in Tyre was of the god Melkart, and it was associated with the king as opposed to a priesthood. And so they had this particular festival that they celebrated, where the king was instrumental in doing these festivities, and this was just about the time that Alexander showed up. And Alexander wanted to come on the island and offer a sacrifice to the king. I'm sorry, to the god. Well, this basically put him in place of the king and was highly irreligious to or sacrilegious to the Tyrians, and that they couldn't allow this. Well, it made Alexander mad, and so he besieged the city. It took him 7 months to bring it down. That made him even madder. And so he really tore up stuff in Tyre. But the foundation that he laid to get there ended up causing sedimentation over the years. It caught sand, and so now there's a pretty wide peninsula that goes out. It's not an island at all. But as a result of the actions that he took, it caused the natural processes of sedimentation to create a land bridge to the city. So, for many years, they were successful in holding off all sieges. Nebuchadnezzar couldn't do it. Artaxerxes III couldn't do it. It took Alexander the Great in 332. Thus we see that it is needless to look outside of Isaiah's period for the justification of an oracle on Tyre. He would be lacking in a sense of the issues of the day if he failed to include Tyre in his purview. As far as Isaiah's forecast of the fall of Tyre is concerned, if seizure of the rock city is required, then it was not until Alexander that this was fulfilled. The thrust of the oracle, however, is that Tyre becomes unsafe for shipping, and its commerce is brought to a standstill, with large-scale loss of life and many refugees. In the light of this, a reference in verse 13 to Assyria as the agent has the merit of simplicity. The devastations wrought by Sargon in southern Mesopotamia were notorious. Seven kings from Cyprus were present at his coronation in Babylon. And Sargon records that when they heard what he was doing in Chaldea, their hearts were rent. Fear fell on them. If Isaiah were looking here forward to Sennacherib, he could well say, "Look at the land of the Babylonians," as a warning. This provides all the historical framing that verse 13 needs. Okay, so he mentions the Assyrians, and even though they didn't take the city, they did great damage to the commerce of the city. Okay, so I don't want to totally lose your attention here on all the details of all the verses. we've gotten the gist, which brings us to the postscript, the last three verses, 15 through 18. Isaiah offers another interim fulfillment in the recovery of Tyre from its time of eclipse after a gap of 70 years. Beyond that, again, there lies the renewed Tyre as holiness to the Lord. Verse 15. The period referred to here can be identified as lying between the campaigns of Sennacherib in the 701 and the decline of Assyria, with consequent recovery of Tyrian strength about 630. So the 70 years, he says, would fit well into this period. And then he discusses the language further. But I'm going to try to get to the last part of this. The foremost thought here is the mercenary motive that was ever the mainspring of Tyre's activity. All, as in prostitution, was done for money. Compare with Amos 1:9, where the prophet's complaint against Tyre is that nothing was allowed to stand in the way of making profit, neither human pity nor the moral obligations of covenant. Verse 17. He says the translation deal with is too precise, carrying overtones of discipline. Will visit is perhaps better. Its meaning is always shaped by context. Since Tyre reappears unchanged on the world scene, driven by financial motives, so the language about hire and prostitution, engaged in worldwide commerce, we might even translate it, the Lord will restore Tyre. The new Tyre will be there to supply the materials for the temple at the time of the return from Babylon in Ezra. But like the return itself, this was only a token of the fulfillment yet to come. Deuteronomy specifically forbade the bringing of the earnings of prostitution as an offering to the Lord. What a picture, then, Isaiah gives of transformation, the converted prostitute consecrating all that the old life, now past and gone, had meant and gained. Isaiah speaks first of a new status. Tyre's earnings will be set apart for the holiness to the Lord. This is the word which adorned the high priest and is used of what belongs to the divine sphere of reality. Secondly, he speaks of a new spirit. Those earnings will not be stored up or hoarded. The old mercenary spirit will be replaced by generosity. Thirdly, there will be a new allegiance and concern for those who live before the Lord, Zion's people. The same thought is expressed in Psalms 87, where Tyre is granted a birthright in Zion. It is also the spirit of the pilgrimage to Zion theme in many verses. So, I don't know if you followed that totally, but this commentator is able to see in those words about the harlot and the holiness unto the Lord a way of expressing that this old way of living, of being totally mercenary, of doing stuff simply for money, is going to be converted into a commitment and an outreach to supply Zion with what before would have been hoarded up by one who was only concerned about doing what's profitable. So, once again, we see that Isaiah is very uninhibited in using metaphors to describe surprising things. So that was a little bit tedious, I know, but hopefully if you read that passage again, it will speak a little bit more to you than it did before. Any comments, questions, or remarks? Very well. According to my timekeeping apparatus, we are out of time. Thank you for your attention.
Fear thou not, for I'll be sea.